It is Wednesday, the 6th of March 2019. We are at our home in Palmerston North. This recording is for broadcast on Manawa Two Peoples Radio and for storage in an archive. It may be made available for public use and we are happy with that. Today we have with us
Ross Puttu, Alison Milden,
and I am Stuart Burks. Now, Ross, you're tall, blonde hair, and so on, and you have a surname Puttu.
Yes, I was originally Rosalind Hansson,
yeah,
which is Scandinavian. My father was, as far as we know, came from, born in Finn in Denmark, but he always talked about the Vikings, apparently, my father said, but have no. Don't know anything else about that.
Because that's going back a bit earlier than.
And I'm married. The name Puttu. I'm married a Maori, of course.
Okay, so you were born in this area in Palmerston?
I was born here in Felixton Street.
Okay.
Yeah, my mother showed me the house once when I was walking past. She said, "Oh, you were born there."
Okay.
And I said, "Really? It's just a house." And she said, "No, what it used to be, midwives used to have homes where." People before
maternity home.
Place like Rostrata. Would it be Rostrata?
Yes, I remember.
Was one of the first ones here. But they were sort of, I don't know when they were private, but they weren't in the hospital. You only went to the hospital if you had something really bad happening.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was quite a surprise because I went past that place every day.
Do you want to tell us when that was?
Oh, I was born on the 22nd of March 1938.
1938. And you got married in 1960. Okay.
Yeah. So I was 22 when I got married.
Okay. Was that about normal for...
No, it was a bit unusual.
Yeah.
I remember Philip, my then husband, went and asked my father for my hand in marriage. And it didn't worry us because my mother's brother married a Maori woman. So I've always had Maoris in my life, you know.
So the issue of marrying... What about marrying at that age, though? Were most
22.
Of your friends... Yeah, were most of your friends married by then or not? Or?
Most of them were. I was...
Okay.
I was
you were on the shelf, were you? You were 22, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
But, he went and asked my father for my hand in marriage and Dad came and talked to me and said... is this what you want? And I said, yes. And he says, right, it's your life.
Yeah. So had you known him long?
I'd known him about 18 months.
Okay. How did you meet?
That was funny because I worked as a toll operator at the post office, it was in those days. And we're having the post office ball. And so some of us didn't have boyfriends or, you know, not someone we actually wanted to take. And one of the girls said, "Oh, my boyfriend works at the Freezing Works. He can find some boys." So we met, I think, the night before, and we went to this movie, and there must have been four couples. So my friend and her boyfriend, and he bought three other blokes, and so we're sort of all put, and we went to this movie, and I remember the movie, it was View from a Window, I think it was called.
Oh, yes.
It's an old movie.
Yes.
And it was funny, because Philip sat one end of the eight, and I sat in the other end. He was on the aisle side, and I was sort of in the middle. It was a Regent Theatre upstairs, and at one stage, there was a whole lot of hugging and kissing and carrying on in the movie, you know. And then it happened again, and I don't know why I said it, but oh, shit. And he used to tell me that about, he said, the first word I heard out of you was, oh.
And just
apart from him. Now, what attracted him was when we went to the ball the next night, my boss at the post office was yakking away, and the Lions were playing the All Blacks in Wellington the next day. it must have been the Friday night, because it was on the Saturday, yes, and the next week it was, that's right, and he said, because Philip was a very pleasant man and, you know, talked very well to everyone, and what impressed me is he talked very good English, you know, there was no sort of, you know, whatever they call it, can't think of
slang?
No, slang, or, you know, part pigeon English sort of thing. I found out later why. But, so he was talking to my boss, and the boss said, oh, something about the rugby, and he said, oh, he's going down, and Philip said, oh, yeah. And he said to me, the boss said to me, oh, do you want to come down? And I said, oh, have you got a seat? And he said, yeah, I've got a couple of seats. And he said, well, do you want to come? So ended up, we went down. About 4:30 in the morning, we had to get in a little, I think it was like some Morris 10 or something. And we went all the way down to Wellington, arrived there about 7, half past 7, parked by the railway station, and had to walk to, would it be Basin Reserve, I think it would be. We had to walk there anyway. We walked there and we got about a mile from the gates and the queue started, one of the gates. Oof. My boss and the other guy, they went round to another gate. They got in, we didn't, because those in the days was, you know, first in, first served.
Oh, okay. So they had tickets, but you still couldn't get
in? No, we didn't have tickets. Oh, we bought them at the gate.
Ah,
yeah,
okay.
There was only those, you know, special people that got the tickets. The rest, that, you know, the mob just...
Yeah.
And we were about, from, you know, 100 metres from the gates, and they closed the gates, and, boy, there was... people were getting really angry, and someone took the gates off the hinges. They went down the ground, and I'm saying to Philip, come on, come on. And he said, no, no, they will get killed, you can't. So we walked back to town, went into a continuous movie, sat through two movies, I think, and then to come up halfway through what the score was. And then when at the final score, we just got up and walked out. So, I've never seen the All Blacks play, really. Yeah,
okay, so. Now there's a few things. A post office ball. So the workplace had a ball.
Yes,
was that very formal? Or?
Oh, yes, you wore a ball gown and, not like these days.
And you had a large live band? Or?
Yes, the live band. Okay. And I can't remember.
Yes, do you remember who it was?
No, I don't remember who it was. Wasn't from the ballroom story or anything.
But that was a sort of annual event, was it?
Yes.
And different workplaces would have their own ball, or just...
a lot of big places. You know, the hospital had the hospital nurse's ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of big balls around.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, and you mentioned also about Philip's English. And you were sort of a bit surprised that he had good English.
Well, all his family spoke very good English, and... his father, Tura, was did a lot of speaking, and he was on the council for King Koriki as an advisor. And I said to him one day, I said, why did you not? He never taught his children a Maori at all. And I said, why didn't you teach, you know, the family boys and that, and everyone Maori? And he said, it is a Maori, it was a Pākehā orientated world, and if they want to get on, they need to speak English properly. And he spoke English better than I did. And he said he went to school when he was about 11 or something, 10 or 11, they were, had to go to school to become law. So that would have been in late 1800s, I presume. He said, no, it might have been early 1900s. And he said, if they uttered a word of Maori, they were whipped. So he had to learn to speak English. And once he learned to speak English properly, about 13, they were allowed to leave. So he decided he would keep his English. And he used to see, you'd ask him something, and if he had to think about it, it was like you're watching him, his brain translating it.
I think
it
in Maori.
In Maori.
Speak it in English.
And putting it in English, what I'd asked him.
So yeah. that was quite noticeable, was it?
He
was thinking in Maori? Because there is a difference.
I used to think in Maori, and especially because I think he liked me because I was interested in everything, you know. If we're going to go into the this time I went on to the Marae beforehand, I said I wanted to know what I could do and what I couldn't do.
Mm.
And he stopped and thought about it and explained what I could do and what I couldn't do, and just follow me, you'll be fine, dear. But yes, he was a very learned man, and there was always someone calling in to talk to him, because they lived on the strait from Cuckoo, which is just past Levin, and there's a I can't think of the name, but it's where the Boy Scouts and that were down the end of that strait.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say Tatum House. Tatum Park.
Okay.
So they lived halfway down there.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the house got burnt down a number of years later.
Yeah.
That's the marae that your sister-in-law took
to. Yes, that's what my children belonged to. Mm. And So
did you notice then, if you saw him thinking things through, did you perceive a sort of different way of seeing things from a Maori perspective, or
some things he may have, but as he said, he thought it was a Pākehā orientated world, and if you want to get somewhere, you know, you do that.
So what did he do as his work?
He was an advisor.
That was his work?
That was his work, and he advised people, and I suppose government people used to call him, especially when the Maori.
Oh, as a Maori advisor to government?
To government, and that.
Yeah.
Well, I presume that was because you often walked in there, and they'd say, oh, don't go into the lounge, because so-and-so's in there. What the flash car outside for.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now then, for you, marrying into a Maori family, what was the social attitude?
Oh, well, I was, you know, they took me in like...
Yeah. They just accepted
they
you
just
as
accepted
that was
me
normal.
As it was. And I think one of the things was my Auntie Norn, who was married to my mother's brother, had been married, her sister, I don't know why, used to take me. Sometimes I'd go on holiday when I was, you know, from the farm, I think, or when I was living in the country, and I'd go down there and stay with her, and just out of Waikanae. And she had an old house, and there always seemed to be kids everywhere, and I had a great time there. You slept on the floor and ate what was put in front of you, you know, I didn't see any difference.
Yeah.
Whereas people look at people and look at this colour of their skin, and you know, when it's all boiled down, we're all the same.
Yeah.
The same.
What was it very? I mean, you grew up in a Pākehā environment.
Yeah.
So did it seem different to you, or did your Pākehā friends find it difficult when you married a Maori?
No, it was quite funny because my mother was English, came from Nottingham. That's another story. And even my father, you know, Maras do not put clothing or anything on the table, because that's where you don't wash anything in the sink, clothing or anything in the sink, anything where food is, you know. And my father, he had wonderful sayings. He was a real Kiwi boy. But someone put their backside on the table for glasses, not asses. But he had all these little sayings that whatever happened, I guarantee he had a saying for it.
So did you find the mixing into a Maori family, there were many differences that you had to adjust to?
No, not really.
No,
I just went along with everything, you know. I you know, okay. I obeyed the customs.
Oh, so I meant you were adaptable, right?
Adaptable, with some people say, I don't want to sleep in a meeting house with all those people. You know, it's a laugh.
Yes.
I just wished I could speak Maori, you know.
Were they all speaking Maori at that stage, or...?
The younger ones weren't.
Yes.
But the older people weren't, because you'd get these old kuisa, who were elderly ladies, and they'd tell jokes. I think you've heard this before.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, what are they saying? They said, well, they can't translate. But I get the gist of she was talking about getting in touch with her husband who was down the paddock, and so she was doing Morse code on the wire fence. But the way she jumped up and down, and everyone was just falling around on the marae, just they couldn't believe it. No, but I laughed, even though I didn't know what she was talking about mostly. But it was just those things I missed, and I think a lot of even the Maori girls didn't speak the language, they understood things. And you know, if they said something to me in Maori, if I knew what they had some inkling of what they were saying, you come and get your kai, you knew you would go eat, hello and goodbye and all that type of thing, and aroha and everything. I'm sad that I didn't learn it then, because I wouldn't retain it now if I went and tried to,
I think it's quite interesting that your father-in-law saw learning Maori as a disadvantage to his children, when in fact it had been an advantage to him to have both languages.
Yes.
At a
But he would be seeing times changing, and I think probably he could see the advantage of being good at English and not realise the cost of not having Maori, because it hadn't.
But now all my sons speak Maori, and they speak the old Maori. Though my eldest son is also done to Rio, which is what they learn now is they've got names for refrigerator. Yeah. That was something that made you laugh, because you'd hear them talking about those, and all of a sudden a refrigerator would come out in the middle of a sentence, or the motor car. You know, but they've got names for that in the new Maori. But they speak it off and on, and my oldest son speaks Maori, English, and Samoan, because his wife's Samoan, and they speak Samoan in her family.
Yeah. So they started learning, your children started learning Maori quite early?
They started learning, as a family, we built a house in Highbury. And it was all new families, and a lot of Maori families there. And a few of us got together and decided we would start a Maori club, so we could get these young kids off the street and teach them kapa haka. Not that I knew anything about it.
So was this a kahangarea or a Maori club?
No, this was Te Waiora Maori Club.
Okay.
Which we started. We had the first meeting in our place, and I've got the minutes and everything at home that we did it all. And so we started with a junior, because that's what it was. It was new area. Most of the kids were little. So, you know, I was just starting school or something. All my children were virtually born there. And we started with a junior and taught the kids, and they performed at a few things. And then they started, some of the adults decided they wanted to have an adult one, so we started an adult one. And so I learnt kapa haka, the poi, and so forth and so forth. Used to stand out a bit.
And that would have been in the early 60s.
Mid to late 1960s. They had their centenary.
The centenary was 1971.
Yes, so we performed down at the river when they had the canoe.
Oh, the arrival of the Europeans.
Yes. And then we performed for the Maori Queen when she came.
And
I remember it was sort of an overcast sort of day, like today in a way, but the sun kept coming out, and there we stood in the sun and outside for about 3 hours, and was going to the Maori Queen's ball that night. It was a debutante ball, and I got home and I was this pink colour, and I was wearing a salmon pink ball frock. And it wasn't just a ball frock, it was a big flowing collapse type frock, all in one, with about 50 blooming little wee buttons on, six I think on each sleeve, and about 12 down the front. So I never drank anything hardly all night.
Yes.
You know why?
Very tricky to get off quickly.
Yeah. The only thing about it was sort of in an organza type thing, but the lining was in satin, so it was nice and soft. But it was interesting, you know.
Now you've talked about sort of you being accepted into the Maori community, but what were sort of general relations like? Were you sort of stepping out of your normal social circle to marry into a Maori
family? No, not really. Philip got on with everyone. He's quite a charmer, I suppose. I think I found sometimes it was a little insulting when I used my name and that say, oh, is that Dutch? Because I'm white. And I said, no, it's Putu, not Puts.
Yes.
Putu, you know. And they said, oh, and give you that sort of look.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Mm. Yeah.
Was that right? Socially or in situations like shops?
Shops and that, most of my friends, you know, they're people, we had a nice big wedding and we was married at Anglican Church in town. Philip's a Catholic, but I refuse to be a Catholic. But everyone thinks we're Catholics. Which is funny, because all my boys went to Catholic college, and my son's children, he did marry a Catholic, but and we seem to know more Catholics than we know anyone else, even when I worked at the Mercy Hospital as a cleaner. My husband by then had left, and the nun said to me, one of the nuns, she said to me, because I'd asked her, told her that, you know, the circumstances and that I wanted to cut my hours a little bit, and she said to me, oh, I was just wondering, dear, are you Anglican or are you Catholic? And I said, I'm actually Anglican. She said, oh, we just wondered, because when Father so-and-so were in here, they asked to see you. And then Bishop Palmer was in here and they asked to see you, because Bishop Palmer was Anglican, but he was a relative on Mary's side. And of course the brother and the father were from the Hutapara College, who knew me. It was one of them wanted me to put bets on. And the other one wanted to know what if I had any books to read.
Oh, you mean when they were patients?
They were patients, you know. So right. I think they didn't wonder.
Yeah, how can we know these people?
We laughed about it later.
So you were saying the marriage didn't last then?
The marriage didn't last, no. He ran off with my best friend, so who needs enemies?
Yeah.
I used to be, you know, I think I was fairly naive sometimes. I took everyone at face value, but I did change after that.
So about how old were you?
My oldest son was first year at college, so he was 14.
Okay.
And my daughter was 11, son 10, and the youngest one was 7.
So there we
go. So I decided to put my foot down and okay. Stop being nice to everyone and look after number one and the family.
Yes.
Which is what I did.
But I think you ought to, before we were recording, you told me that you made a point of bringing up your children knowing their Maori heritage.
Oh, hang yes.
Even after the marriage ended.
Yes, so we went down to a tangi, I think it was, you know, and I spoke with a number of people and they said, no, we want you. You're still the family. You can still come, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my children are all registered with the Te Korihi, which is the marae at Kuku.
Okay.
And that's my mother-in-law's marae. My father-in-law, his was Rokoa and Otaki. Yeah.
So the wider family relationship was retained.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, well, there was a couple of brothers that, and Josephine, we didn't get on that well. Mm. But my sister, Finita, she was my best friend, really, because I rang her and said that he'd gone, and she said, oh, well, he wasn't good enough for you anyway. Yeah. But she was a midwife and she was entirely very matron-like. She was a bit like a father, really, because she was very, you know, straight-laced and said what she wanted to say, and that was it.
Now, we're actually nearly at time, but I do have one question, because I know a Maori woman who was married to an American colleague of mine. She said that for her, it was very different sort of socialising in a Maori environment and socialising in a Pākehā environment. She'd be invited to some Pākehā function and she felt she'd have to behave quite differently. Did you notice any difference in that?
I suppose there is a difference because, in the homes, it didn't make much difference, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was always careful that I wasn't going to stand on anyone's toes or anything. Mm-hmm. But after we got married, there was a number of mixed marriages after that.
Mm.
You
were one of the earlier ones, were you, think?
Oh, it was. Nowadays, they're all over the place and all types of, you know, but I tell my children, you know, they've got a very mixed family,
heritage,
really, because one of my mother-in-law's sisters married a Chinaman, so the Tipchi Lees are from up north. So it was quite funny when we had a family reunion once, and they were all little, and it was down at the marae, and the Maori kids were coming and saying, there's Chinese kids out there, Mum. They're your cousins. And apparently the same thing was that the Chinese kids were saying, the Maoris. But now, you know, they get on well and they're all grown up and that, but yeah, it was just funny. Yeah. But there's always going to be people, you know, that look down on you because you're Maori or whatever. Doesn't matter if you've done something.
I think each group tends to look down on others because they see the difference.
You know, people have said to me, blah, 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 something about, you know, where I live and or what I'm doing. And that, like I became a nurse at the age of 38. I decided to start nursing, study and do nursing. And I run to people and they say, oh, what are you an aide? And I said, no, I'm a nurse. You're a nurse? Yes, didn't I do well for some from Highbury? And I think, you know, it's just one of those things.
They've
silly
got
things.
Attitudes.
They've got attitudes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care whether you're rich, poor, or otherwise, as long as you're nice to each other and tolerate each other, you know, different things overseas and, you know, the Americans and that, and they say, their constitution says all men are born equal.
Well, they said that when there was slavery.
That's right. You know, Murray's had slaves too, but it was,
their own, within their own structure. We have the term, but whether it's the same. Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, we are actually at time, so we'll stop at that.